If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
We've also hosted bus tours. So we'll bring investors to, we brought them to San Antonio to see the properties that they've invested in, to ask all the questions they have, to understand the whys and the hows of what we've chosen to do to improve the value of the properties.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Arlene Garza is the principal and co-founder of Reap Equity. She launched her initial real estate investing business in 2012, and she and her husband began with a small 24-unit property, which they owned and managed. As a principal in Reap Equity, they have sponsored a total of 12 multifamily acquisitions, taking four properties full cycle with total returns as high as 370%. Her portfolio currently consists of 2,621 units as a deal sponsor and passive investor in San Antonio, Atlanta, Dallas, Jacksonville, and Houston. Arlene, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you, Sam?
I am wonderful. Thank you for asking. I'm excited to have you on. It's always great to have people on who have done it. And I mean, the basic flow of the show, and I ask this to everybody who comes on, is where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there? Can you give us a brief overview on that?
Sure. A brief overview. Spent about 20 years in corporate America in the banking industry. I have a degree in finance, so that made a lot of sense coming out of college. My husband owned a property management software company in the Dallas area. And so when he sold the business in 2008, we made the decision to move to San Antonio. Now, prior to that, my husband had seen the back end of what owners were doing from his software. And he'd mentioned along the way, I'd really love to buy multifamily real estate. And as conservative as I am, I said, hold on a minute there. I really need to understand the numbers behind it. And we educated ourselves on multifamily buying, what it took, and then bought, as you said, our first 24 unit in 2012 that we completely managed ourselves, from the leasing, the advertising, to accounting, rehab, you name it, we did it ourselves. And it was by design, because we wanted to understand everything there was about running a multifamily property. So from there, we grew. We bought a property around the corner to add some scale so we could actually bring in at least a part-time manager. And then we bought 188 and on and on and on. So technically, to date, it's 15 properties. I think you mentioned 12. We have 15 properties that we've purchased, and six have gone full cycle.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, that doesn't happen overnight. And there are lessons, I think, that you could write several books on this. But what are some of the key things that you've done right, and the key things you say that you wish maybe you had changed along the way?
Sure. The first one is education, not only through our own methods, but we joined the Apartment Association and we became certified apartment managers, certified apartment portfolio supervisors. And through the process, we learned a lot about the risk management side of the business, how properties should run. So from an asset management standpoint, we got a lot of good information from that. So that was key. The second thing was we joined several real estate groups. That was huge, because that is a network of like-minded people. And the third thing is we got a mentor, and the mentor really helped us scale and grow our business. So the first 500 units we owner managed, and then our mentor in 2015 said, well, it seems to me that you are so involved in the business that you're not working on the business in terms of growing it. So we decided to take the properties to third-party management and did that for about a year, a little over a year. Well, in that time, we doubled in size. So his advice was very good advice. And then from that point, we had about 1,000 units. So we felt like there was enough scale to bring everything back in-house. And so we relaunched our management company at that point, built a great team, and started, owner managing again, but from a different perspective. we actually had somebody running the management company, overseeing the management company. We brought in HR, accounting, construction. So we brought in all the pieces that made sense for us so that we were no longer in the business. We were overseeing and truly leading the teams.
Yeah, and I think that's key. I mean, you guys got to a point where you really could hire the right people to fill those voids. Was that a challenge when, on both ends, when you both handed the keys over to somebody else on the property management side? Like, was I can imagine that there was a little bit of tension there as you go, okay, you guys aren't doing this right. You're missing this. You're missing that. Like, getting that ramped up, was that a challenge on the front side of that?
It was a challenge. It's like leaving your brand new baby with, you know, the babysitter for the first time, and you're really hoping they're going to take good care of them, and you want to leave a camera there to watch. But in this case, you know, I had also a background in HR from the banking side. So I've had a really good ability to hire people. And from then it became a matter of leading them in the right direction. For us, it was about building the right culture within the company, a culture that's driven by respect and values. And so hiring that team that shared in those values and that was willing and able to, you know, push our brand forward. And so that it was a challenge, and we did it in steps, and we were still very involved in the beginning. And then over time, we, you know, let our team do more of the work and lead the company forward with us still like a board of directors.
Right, right. Which I think that's, I mean, if a company's ever to grow, I mean, that's the only way to do it. I mean, you've got to, I think us as entrepreneurs, the hardest thing is to extract ourselves from what we're good at, which is, you know, we were talking with someone about this yesterday. It's like, man, I'm so good at this. It's really hard to turn loose of it.
The other thing that we've learned along the way is how to work as a husband and wife team. So my husband had run his own company. I really hadn't been in the entrepreneur space. And so it's easy to step over each other. So we took time to really look at our unique abilities. And, you know, I looked at, he'd run a large company. And so I said, you know, what about if you are, you know, let's discuss you being over the management company or overseeing that piece of our business. And, you know, with my numbers background, I said, I'd love to really do the acquisitions. And so now we divide and conquer, and life is a whole lot better with each of us being focused in our particular strengths.
Right. Yeah. And that's also, I think, a golden nugget, especially if you're working, and a lot of us are. I know, my wife and I have worked together since we got married, and certainly have gone through those, like, division of responsibilities makes for a much happier work life environment. Because once you're stepping on top of each other, and it just goes downhill fast. So that's really cool. How did you guys navigate and of course you come from a banking background, so maybe it was your connections in the banking industry, but I think at some point, you know, this all gets kind of done the same way. How did you navigate the capital raise for your acquisitions?
Sure. You know, in the capital stack, you've got your debt and your equity. I mean, the first thing I'll share with folks is when you're doing your first deal, find a partner that has experience. But make sure they're synergistic. Maybe make sure that they carry the same values that you do. Because we wouldn't have gotten the first deal if we hadn't brought in a very minority partner. But he had the experience, so the bank got comfortable with it. I mean, he brought in $20,000 into our first deal. But it was enough that the bank got comfortable with it. So on the lending side, we try to make sure we have really good relationships with 3 to 4 lenders, because you don't know if one's going to provide something on one particular acquisition that the other can't. And so that's a big part of what we do. On the equity side, we did build our investment team. So we have a database of probably around 2,000 investors, which we built over time. A lot of that is referrals from our own investors who have repeatedly invested with us. And those are the best testimonials for us, because they're sharing their experience in working with us. We do have an investor relations coordinator that we brought on the team about a year ago. And so she helps manage the process from, you know, our investor portal to all the communications with our investors. So building that investor database is a real big key to doing more and more deals and bigger deals as you go forward.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. I would think that's, obviously that's quintessential. Did you ever have a deal where you could not raise the money you needed to get it done?
No, fortunately, we've been very blessed. We have been oversubscribed on every deal that we've put out there. And again, I think it's because we focus a lot on our investors. We put our own money into every deal. We believe that if it's good enough for us, then we're comfortable sharing it with someone else. And I think the investors enjoy that we're very transparent. We're sharing everything that's going on in the properties as everything moves forward. We've also hosted bus tours. So we'll bring investors to, we brought them to San Antonio to see the properties that they've invested in, to ask all the questions they have, to understand the whys and the hows of what we've chosen to do to improve the value of the properties.
Right, right. I think that's amazing. Doing a bus tour, that takes a lot of effort to put that together, but it sounds like something that's paid dividends.
It has. It's a source of pride, right? I mean, people have invested their hard-earned money in these properties, and to get to see them, to get to take a picture in front of the sign and, you know, share it with family and friends is exciting for us and for them.
Right, right. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm both an active and passive investor, and I have toured a lot of the sites, usually on my own, you know, letting obviously the sponsors know, hey, I'm going to, you know, go walk the grounds because I want to go see actually where we're, and it's been all over the country, but where we're putting our money, because that's, I think it brings a new dimension to investing when you can see, and that's one of the things we love about real estate is the ability to touch it. It's not the stock market where you own some, you know, ethereal share in something you can't understand. Like, there's an actual physical asset that you can go and put your hands on. And I think that's a really cool idea. Let's move into the growth of your management company. I know you said you guys hired some really key people when you brought that on. We talked a little bit about like turning the keys over the first time. What was that like growing out? And I'm assuming that's a separate company for you guys, as an independent LLC maybe that then manages these properties. Do you guys manage only your own properties, or do you also manage other people's properties?
Currently, we manage only our own properties. We do have in our strategy to move into some third party very selectively, because we like to make sure that we can focus on our assets as well. And we want to bring the same level of attention to any properties that we were to manage for other owners. And so that is in our goals for 2021, but we'll take that slow and we'll be very deliberate about how we do that. So for that third party management, you know, we do have an asset manager on our team. That was strategic because the asset manager works alongside our VP of operations, kind of monitoring what's happening, providing additional feedback, daily and weekly monitoring of the KPIs, the key performance indicators of all of the properties. So it's a very synergistic and really cool process to watch. And so we're adding to the team. We're adding another asset management analyst. We added a portfolio analyst. And so that is, again, strategic so that we can look to grow that side of the business by having the right people in place.
Did you build this from the ground up? Or did you really have some templates that you worked off of that other people, because I mean, obviously you're not forging new ground, but it is unique to you guys. So, I mean, did you build all these positions from ground up, or did you have some help along the way?
We built them from the ground up, but really looking at what others have done, right? So we looked at the third party management companies that we had utilized. We looked at their structure. How were they set up? How are they organized? What worked? What didn't work from an owner's perspective? And so we took all of those tips from watching how it had been done by others, and we incorporated it into our approach and how we wanted to do it.
Right, right. And that's interesting. Let's talk about KPIs for a second. Was it, one of the things I find is challenging is developing the correct KPI for the position, because you might have a kind of an idea of what somebody should be doing, but maybe there's a KPI that's not necessarily attached or directly. It does correspond, but it's hard to connect the dots maybe in the beginning. What are some of the KPIs you guys look for? You know, maybe I don't pick a few positions and throw them out there. I'd be really curious what some of the things that you guys are using as metrics for your team.
Sure. So for our team, when we look at, I'll start with the ops side of it. Obviously, NOI growth is huge, right? Your net operating income, because that's really what your property value is driven off of. So we're looking at things like renewal ratios, closing ratios from the leasing side. We're looking at rent growth parameters. And so that really is on the income side of it. We are looking at, you know, some other things. We actually just looked at we're revamping our investor reporting that we send out monthly to be a little more detailed in providing some of that data. So all of those numbers go into the operation side of, are we growing the income and how, and are we hitting our pro forma projections? So we just held we do a quarterly review as the bigger team, but our ops team is looking at it monthly and they're projecting forward. You know, what are the expirations, the lease expirations coming up, and how are we positioned to fill any of those, and what tactics are we going to use to get more people to renew? So the one good thing that came out of COVID was that our renewal ratios went way up. People didn't want to move, right? If they didn't have to hire a moving company or you know, have somebody in their homes to move their things from one place to another, that was a good thing. But what also helped drive that was that we never closed our doors. Other companies closed the doors and said, nobody come into our offices. We didn't do that. And so we were accessible to our residents, and we continued doing their work orders, their service requests, whereas other companies, you know, weren't comfortable doing that. We trained our team to be able to go in safely and take care of resident needs. And so that's just part of it. On the expense side, we watch our controllable expenses. That's huge. So one property we bought in Houston in 2019, we were able to decrease the controllable expenses by $400 a unit.
Wow.
Divide that by the cap rate, and you got an $800,000 increase in your value just from the expense side, not even touching the income. So we take a look at that. We're watching, you know, our rehab. So when we're projecting the rents for a rehab unit, we want to make sure we hit them because we're spending the money. So those are some of the numbers and parameters we're watching. Our asset manager gets a report daily. He's got his own customized report of these KPIs. So he's watching them and he's communicating when something looks out of whack or congratulating when something looks really positive. And then on a monthly basis, we're all reviewing it. What was different from what we budgeted? What's the variance and what caused it? And how do we fix it next month so we can catch up if we didn't exactly hit the number? So it's a constant watch of the numbers, but I'm not doing that. I'm empowering my team to do that. And it works really, really well.
Right, right. Yeah, you have accomplished something in building the systems inside of your company that I think a lot of people who are listening to this are probably really jealous of, myself included, because that takes a lot of effort. I think one of the things that we commonly forget is the amount of effort that it takes on the front end to build those systems correctly, because it really requires you to slow down to speed up, which most of us who are, you know, go-getter, you know, turn and burn entrepreneurs, like, let's get this done, baby. Let's buy some stuff. And, you know, the next thing you know, you're like, oh, crud. Like, I did a lot. It was frenetic activity, but not much progress. So kudos to you guys for getting that done.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, my husband had said, you know, even before 2020 started, that he felt like we were entering the decade of operations. And for us, you can buy a property really well, but the money really is made in operating that property and increasing the value over time and hitting that appreciation, you know, value when you're ready to sell or refi. And we just did a couple of refis. And on those two deals we bought in mid-2018, we had a $12 million increase in value. So, you know, the time and effort you spend on the systems and the processes, they pay off. But you do have to invest. You have to invest time and money. And we invested in our team. We invested in people to make sure that we could leverage everybody's talents for the better good of our properties and our investors.
I love that. Well done. That's, hats off to you guys. That's brilliant.
Thank you.
Let's jump into the final four here. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Educate yourself. You know, in my mind, I'm not comfortable I feel very responsible taking other people's money into these deals. And so make sure that you understand what you're doing before you take on other people's money. Make sure that you understand what it's all about in running these properties or having somebody run them for you if you're doing third party. So that's the biggest thing, is educate yourself. And if you're new, find a mentor. Find somebody else that has done it and learn from them, because it will save you a lot of costly mistakes.
That's for sure. What is one thing you are currently doing to stay on top of your game?
I read a lot of market data, especially the markets that we're invested in. I want to understand, what is the job growth, you know, forecast? What is the population growth forecast? What are the submarkets? I go drill down into the individual submarkets in Houston and San Antonio, where we currently invest. And I'm watching some others. I'm watching DFW. I'm watching Austin. I'm watching some markets in Florida, because those are markets that are potential, you know, markets for us to move into. But you want to understand the data. All the brokerage houses put out great data. Get on their email list. You'll get some awesome reports that you don't have to go search for the data. It's all compiled for you. They put together market forecasts for all the big markets in the country. And it's a great way as a passive or as an active to keep on top of the game and understand, where is it going? Where are things going? And what do I want to be a part of? And what markets do I want to be invested in?
Right. That's great. When it comes to giving back, what is one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
Oh, well, thank you for that. One of the things that my family has done is we have a scholarship at our hometown high school. And then we have a 2-year scholarship at the 2-year school that I went to before I went to finish my 4-year degree. And so we give back in that respect. We try to have at least one or two philanthropic events that we do as a company to give back to the community. For example, we did a food drive during COVID. My husband and I actually purchased the first set of groceries because we were hearing from our managers that people were paying their rent, but they weren't sure how they were going to feed their families. And so we delivered grocery bags full of groceries to these residents that indicated they were struggling. And so we want to take care of our residents. It's not just about them paying us money. It's about us giving back to them.
Right. Yeah. Without good residents, you don't have a business. So that's awesome. Right. Good for you guys. Arlene, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
They can reach me at reepequity.com, and that's reepequity.com. And we're very good about responding to anybody that has questions. And then we typically will set up a phone call. Once you reach us through that, we'll set up a call so that we can get to know you and you can get to know us.
Awesome. Thank you, Arlene, for your time. Certainly appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam. Good luck to you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.